We all want our listeners to enjoy a wide variety of nutritious foods, to have energy to grow, be active, learn, and take healthy lifestyle into adulthood. The way we talk about food and teach food and nutrition matters. Our language is very powerful. Today's recording will discuss evidence-based strategies that support secondary school students to develop food and nutrition knowledge and skills in a neutral and non-judgmental and safe way. Food relationships are complex and emotive. You know, parts of this sessions you may find that you're reacting to some of the content. So for some people, please consider if this presentation is right for you at this time. Before we get started, in the spirit of reconciliation, we would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and pay our respects to elders past and present and any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here listening today. I'm Deborah Cox and I'm joined by my colleagues Rachel Kavanagh and Laura Hurren. We are population health officers with the EACH Prevention and Population Health team. Laura and Rachel have postgraduate university qualifications in nutrition and extensive experience in supporting children and adolescents and their families to find joy in eating well. As we begin, Laura, where has this information on the topic come from and who is it for?
The information in today's recording is based on current research in nutrition and health and also our experiences and observations working in this area. It also supports recent changes to the Australian curriculum, which now focuses more on the type of language used to educate students on food and nutrition. We recognise that there are many influences on an adolescent's eating habits, their knowledge and their skills, including social media, marketing and finances, just to name a few. The purpose of today's discussion is to focus on how secondary schools can help adolescents develop food literacy and support them to establish a lifelong positive relationship with food.
Yeah. And as we begin, let's take a moment to consider changing the way we talk about food recommendations. And think about what food might mean to your students. And Rachel, I'll go to you on this one.
Thanks, Deb. So for some students, there may be an emotional response. Some students may think positively about food and eating and think about domains such as culture, connection, celebration and fun, while others may have a different perspective and see food as a source of stress. So appreciating that each student is going to think differently about food can help us deliver food and nutrition education that's neutral and non-judgmental.
And there are so many things for us to consider. Laura, we understand that social media and advertising has a big impact on students' lives as well and their thoughts and behaviours. What insight can you share on that?
Well, there's a lot of evidence to show that unfortunately social media, newspapers, magazines, movies and advertising have ingrained diet culture into how we talk, think and see food, placing a moral value on it. Eating well is often portrayed as an all or nothing approach. When we label or categorise food such as healthy or unhealthy, good or bad, it can translate into confusing and conflicting thoughts and messages about food, especially for adolescents. Research shows us that it can lead to altered relationships with food such as picky eating, emotional eating and disordered eating. So with all of this in mind, this discussion provides an opportunity to think about reframing the way we speak about and teach food and nutrition to secondary school students.
And with this in mind, Rachel, why should we change the way we talk about food with adolescents?
Yeah, so as we've alluded to, food is more than just food. It includes environmental, social, economic, cultural, and political domains. And we know that traditional approaches to nutrition education in secondary schools have scrutinised food by its nutritional composition without considering the broader meaning of food. So we also know that dietary habits are not always a choice. For example, food insecurity is a big issue affecting many Australians currently. as well as medical conditions, low food literacy, mental health, access to food and cooking equipment can also influence people's food choice. Traditionally, the focus in food education has been on avoidance, restriction, and disease prevention. So as Laura just mentioned, polarizing language that categorizes food into healthy or unhealthy, or eat more or avoid, has commonly been used in the curriculum. We know that when students are provided with these strict guidelines around eating and physical activity, it actually has the reverse effect and discourage intuitive eating and movement. So polarizing words can disengage and may be harmful to some students. While this approach may have been well intended, it may contribute to a poor relationship with food, including disordered or restricted eating.
Yeah, it sounds like that there's an opportunity here for secondary schools to help students develop skills, knowledge and resources to live well, and also to connect with their food and food systems and a food culture, and ultimately find joy in eating well. And we understand that finding joy in eating well looks like having good, positive relationships with food, people listening to their body and eating what they need and enjoying the food that they eat.
Yeah, you're right, Deb. Language and how we talk about food is more important than ever, particularly since the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been a doubling in eating disorder presentations. So supporting adolescents to establish a positive relationship with their body and enjoy a wide variety of nourishing foods is especially important right now.
Yeah. Now, look, this sounds like such a big change, a real shift in how we talk about food with people. Laura, do you have any practical examples of this, what this might look like?
Yes, so when we shift to using neutral language around food and nutrition, we can eliminate any moral value placed on food. So it's just food. Descriptions of food then become objective, so avoiding the need for categorising and using subjective labels. Neutral language also removes judgment about food choices. So an example of how you might implement this might be the scenario where a student tells you about the lunch they've brought from the canteen. Rather than commenting on their food choice, such as "that food is not good for you," we could instead say, "Oh, I see you've chosen a hot food for lunch today," or "I also bought my lunch from the canteen today."
Yeah, what I noticed with that first example, Laura, is that you used your senses to objectively describe the food and really enjoyed any judgment about what the student's food choice was. And in the second response, as an example, you didn't comment on the food at all. So both examples have avoided placing like the moral value on food or describing it using your own personal thoughts.
Yeah, so in this example, the student walks away retaining their own view of their lunch rather than potentially feeling judged about their choices. So a neutral approach means having discussions about food and nutrition with curiosity as the main goal. So, for example, a student may say, "Deborah, I've got leftovers for lunch today." Using a lens of curiosity, you might ask, "Who made your meal?" Or, "What ingredients have you included in it?" Or, "What other kinds of leftovers do you enjoy bringing for lunch?" So we can see with these examples that it engages the student to explore food with curiosity. And this approach supports intuitive eating and encourages acceptance, appreciation, understanding and curiosity around food as well.
Food neutrality will be a really new concept for a lot of people. And some may think that food neutrality ignores nutrition and health. Rachel, can you talk about how food neutrality actually supports these concepts?
Yeah, so we all know that nutrition and health are very complex and vary depending on the individual's experiences and circumstances. So we touched on food insecurity previously. So a person who may be experiencing food insecurity is going to have a different view of health and nutrition versus someone who is food secure. Likewise, a person with a chronic health condition may view health and nutrition differently to someone who doesn't have a chronic health condition. So a food neutral approach allows the students to make food choices based on their own needs, including their mental and physical health, as well as their emotional and social well-being. So when we apply this neutral approach to food and nutrition educations, students learn to think critically and holistically about food rather than the traditional structured approach of a one size fits all. It also removes the moral value of one food or food group being nutritionally superior. Research has found that using this approach actually leads to better physical and emotional health, especially in the areas of eating habits, lifestyle, body image, self-esteem, and overall quality of life.
And keeping that in mind, how can schools focus on and support nutrition and health?
Well, we want to continue to encourage the lens of food curiosity that has been embedded in primary school food education. So to do this, secondary schools can build food literacy through experiences, knowledge, and skill acquisition. Food literacy has many parts, including the capacity to source, select, prepare, cook, and share food in a sustainable way. And these skills support a holistic approach to nutrition and health, and also reinforce the role that food plays in communities and cultures. So to create environments that support health and nutrition, any process that scrutinises nutritional composition of food should be kept for operational planning only. An example is the traffic light food system, which categorises foods into green, amber, or red. It's actually designed to help schools make decisions around the types of foods and drinks they serve their community, rather than bringing this to the students' attention. And it also makes the healthy choice the easy choice for students and maintains food neutrality.
Sounds really holistic and really comprehensive approach to addressing that in a school context. Rachel, why are we focusing on secondary schools?
So we know that students do spend a large amount of their time at school and are engaged in both formal and informal learning. So these experiences have a big influence on a student's attitude and their beliefs around food. We know now more than ever that students are exposed to unsolicited and often inaccurate food and nutrition information, as Laura mentioned earlier about social media, advertising, and in other places. So we know that this is negatively impacting adolescents' health and well-being in the form of eating disorders, body image, and food choices. So secondary schools have the unique opportunity to challenge what the students hear and see on these platforms by providing evidence-based food and nutrition information. So in doing so, secondary schools can help to foster positive relationships with food that can be taken into adulthood. So with the rise in convenience foods and time pressures, life skills such as cooking are declining. The school curriculum is well positioned to address this through hands-on experiences with food preparation within their food and health subjects. And it also has the secondary benefits that the skills learnt can extend to promoting positive social connection through food from the students that the students eat, prepare and eat together.
You've both mentioned about food education, and Laura, I'm wondering what this looks like in the secondary school curriculum.
Well, it's not just about curriculum. It's about creating supportive environments in addition to curriculum changes. And when schools are able to address both of these things, this is where we can really start to create a healthy food culture within a school that actually extends into the rest of students' lives. Having a whole of school healthy food policy supports indirect messaging, such as the types of foods available at the school canteen, food available for celebration days and fundraising events, and it role models the school's principles around food and nutrition. And this also allows for curious conversations about food to happen. Empowering students to learn about food in a non-judgmental way can be achieved in a variety of ways, such as developing skills related to growing, cooking, and sharing food, learning to plan and cook meals and snacks that include a variety of culturally and personally significant foods, exploring how food links to family, history, culture, and tradition, identifying foods in the Australian Guide to Healthy Eating that support opportunities to increase food variety. So, for example, what foods are made from grains? When teaching about nutrients, using a food neutral approach. So discussions about nutrients that focus on their role in the body and their connection to foods. An example is fiber helps in digestion and can be found in a variety of foods such as whole grains, vegetables, and fruits. Reflecting on what influences food choices, including advertising, social media, and food access. And finally, inviting curiosity around mindful eating and exploring appetite signals. So all of these suggestions are based on evidence around food and nutrition education. It's worthwhile noting here that for some teachers and students, reflecting on their own experiences with food and nutrition can be confronting and emotive. So personal stories related to body image, food selection, and lifestyle habits should be avoided in the classroom. Students and teachers can create a classroom agreement that can help to create a safe, respectful, and supportive learning environment as well. So in addition, students and staff should have access to appropriate wellbeing support should they be needed.
What I'm taking away from that too is it's really not just one thing that will address this issue. It's a whole lot of things done together which will have a bigger impact. And there's so many direct and subtle ways that we can influence attitudes relating to food. Rachel, before we finish up, can you recommend some references that where people can find out more about this topic?
Yeah, so we've provided a tip sheet which covers a number of references on our website, but some of our favourites are the new Australian curriculum resource entitled Food and Wellbeing. The CSI RO have recently provided a Taste and Learn resource. The Phenomenon website also provides age-appropriate lesson plans for teachers. There's a Canadian resource called Teach Food First, which focuses on food and nutrition education until year eight, while other resources include the Size Inclusive resource from the Better Health Network, as well as Following Kids Eating Colour on Instagram. She is a registered dietitian.
Amazing. Thank you. And thank you, Rachel and Laura, for your wisdom today, talking about changing the way we talk about food. And look, we've just really scratched the surface. If you have any more questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is prevention@each.com.au. And if there are any other topics that you would like to suggest or know more about, we would love to hear from you as well. So thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.